Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, March 9th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools that I've ever encountered. These tools are gratefully available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website, click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. The tool is called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Worksheet. It began as the Reality Management Worksheet, and now most often when Michael refers to it, he calls it the Wake-Up Sheet. And that particular tool, although it's only one of a whole host of tools offered on that website and through the archives of the show, that particular tool is the core tool in this work. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for pretty close to 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and relationships and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional state I experience into part of that infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. The great part about this is it's a tool that you can download for free, a simple PDF file on that same page. You don't have to have any special training to begin to get benefits from it. And you can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process and or they've been calling in with powerful testimonials about how the worksheet has benefited them, the application of the worksheet has benefited them, and or they've called in with specific questions about clarifications on that tool or other tools. And those have been, those specific audio files have been curated out of the 11 plus years of archive work, because this internet show has been working to provide support for these tools for over 11 years now. The first 8 years were just 1 hour a day, 5 days a week. And the last 3 years have been 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you tap on that glowing heart icon, it will give you access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And that, the addition of that app for the phone has been a tremendous blessing for a lot of people, because most people don't go anywhere these days without their smart device. And this means that wherever you are and you have your smart device with you, if you choose an interpretation for life events that leaves you feeling something less than loving, there's a tool right in your smart device that can help you understand what it is you're doing to create that negative emotional experience. And if it's not being useful in the moment, you can choose to change it, because this knowledge is power kind of thing, especially when it comes to how we're creating our experience in life. So we hope people do that soon and often. Go there, download the app on your phone, print off the PDF file of the worksheet process, put it to use in your life. And the reason we hope people do that is because our experience has been that the application of these tools has improved the quality of our lives. Another reason we are hopeful that people do that is because the more people do that, get active experience with the tools, the more it stirs up comments, questions, testimonials, answers, and we delight when people share those with us. If you would like to do that and you're listening live now, you can call the number 563-999-3581, and once you've called that number, press 1 on your phone. That'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll announce it by your area code. And we're very happy when people do that, because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work, which is to be of service. The other thing that's happening this year is we're working our way rather slowly through the Way of Mastery. And the Way of Mastery is a book that was channeled from 1994 to 97 in audio form, and then it was transcribed and turned into the book The Way of Mastery. It was originally received as three separate books, The Way of the Heart, The Way of Transformation, and The Way of Knowing. But the way we're working with it this year is to read the book and provide commentary. So we're reading it as though it's one book, this large book, The Way of Mastery. And the archives of that process that we've been doing since January 10th are available on the website mindshiftersacademy.org, and there's a separate page for the Way of Mastery files. I believe I just put the abbreviation WOM for Way of Mastery, and there's one page where you can hear an audio file of me just reading each chapter slowly, carefully, straight through with no commentary, doing the best I could to stay literal, verbatim in my reading of the lesson. And then, since January 10th, we've been reading it with commentary. And so there's a separate page to get access to those files, where I've edited out just the first hour of the internet show and uploaded them. And because of the blessedly busy nature of the past couple of weeks, I'm a little bit behind in uploading those shows. They're still available in the archives at whyagain.org, searchable by date. And as time allows, I will update that webpage on mindshiftersacademy.org so that the edited first hour only version of those files will be available on that page as well. So, before we get started, I will open it up for comments and questions. Since we haven't had many comments or questions for a while, call-in number is 563-999-3581. And we have some time before I get back into reading and commentary on Lesson 5 in the Way of Mastery. there's time for us to have a hand or two raised and answer your questions or respond to a comment or hear the answers that are coming to you as we, I'll call it, engage this process. We had a support group last night, the Mindshifters support group. We do our best to have a Mindshifter support group every Tuesday and Thursday night, and they're available through Zoom. Again, all the information you would need to join us in that is available at mindshiftersacademy.org. And I would hasten to remind people that there's a separate login page for Tuesdays and Thursdays. So you need, you know, the Tuesday number on Tuesday and the Thursday number on Thursday. Otherwise, it doesn't work so well. So let us know if you're interested in joining us and or have any questions about that. And or you can do us a favor by passing that information along to anybody you think might be interested in joining us. So there will be another support group tomorrow night, Thursday night. Both of those, the Tuesday and the Thursday group, run from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. And we'd be happy to have you join us. So there aren't any hands up, so I will march on and pick up where we left off. Yesterday we were reading in Lesson 5. Lesson 5 is titled simply, The Keys to the Kingdom. How to get where most of us on a spiritual journey say we want to go. How to get, the old adage is, you know, to get to heaven you have to go through the eye of the needle. So how to figure out what is your particular eye of the needle. How to tune into the energy that can guide you through the very life you're living and bring you to what you would call your destination or home. So there are five words, five keys, five concepts, five practices. And the first one is desire. We read an entire lesson about that several times in Lesson 4. And that word desire in this work refers to a flow of energy that's giving rise to your heart beating and your food digesting and the squirrels bouncing around in the spring and the flowers blooming. It's the energy of creation, and therefore it is extraordinarily subtle and infinitely powerful. And most of us don't have any idea that it's there or that we could tune into it, align with its vibration, and learn to let it guide our life experience. So the first key in this work to the kingdom is becoming aware of the energy of desire and learning to tune into it. Because without it, nothing arises, nothing is created. The second key is intention. And desire itself is cultivated in each one of us through intention, through this choice to be committed to bringing our attention back over and over again to the process of remembering what we're truly here for. So intention is cultivated in us by asking over and over again, as often as it comes to our mind, and then pausing to listen for the answer, asking questions like, what is it that I most desire? What is it I'm doing on this planet? What am I really, truly committed to in this life, in this experience? And as we do that, and we ask that question as often as it arises, then we are cultivating intention, which helps us tune into the energy of desire. The third key is allowance. And this lesson points out very, very clearly that most of us in the Western world are taught to strive for things. We are not taught how to or the benefits of being in a state of allowing, going with the flow. But, you know, the highlight in that lesson for me is that allowance is the cultivation of a way of looking at events in your life, not as obstacles to getting what you want, but looking at those events in your life, each and everything in your life, as a stepping stone, something that's presenting you each moment with a blessing of the lessons that are required to heal what you might call obstacles. Obstacles not to some kind of a perceived or conceptualized success, but obstacles to your becoming aware, consciously aware of the presence of the creative energy, love, some would call it, as the very source and ground of your being. So the more you wake up to that in allowance, the more connected you become to this energy of creation, the more your life changes for the better. If anybody's trying to follow along, we're on the bottom of page 62, where it's talking about the fourth key. And the fourth key, you know, to be honest with you, and in the support groups when I first started introducing this, this is the key to the kingdom that most Western minds really fight against. The word they use for it is surrender. And Michael Rice likes to talk about, he used to talk about this a lot 18 or 19 years ago when I first got introduced to this work. He talked about how most people don't want to hear about surrender. All they've been taught, all they know how to do is set goals and achieve them and fight and conquer and competition and be the best. And they don't want to talk about surrender. They don't even want the word mentioned in their presence. They certainly don't want to consider it as a part of a practice in their life. And he says that's very unfortunate because the fact of the matter is, whether we realize it or not, every one of us is always surrendering to something. In this Western world, we're surrendering to hostility or fear. Pain, sadness, confusion, grief, blame, guilt. And when those energies get activated in our mind or arise from us pouring enough of our mind energy into our certain belief system patterns, they drive our behavior. And we are not in choice. We are not free in that moment. When we are raging, we are not free. When we are stuck in confusion, grief, fear, resentment, we're not free. Those energies, as they get to a peak, to an intensity level, they take over and they motivate what Michael Rice would call the automatic decision process in us, and they drive our behaviors. So the text reads, the fourth key is surrender. As these three stages mature, you rest into the final stage of surrender. And surrender means there is no longer any restlessness. Surrender means that you know through every fiber of your being that there is no one here living a life. There is life flowing through the body-mind personality for as long as it lasts. So this brings me back to this commentary. It's not in the text. This brings me back to, as we've talked about and shared with the Thursday group a couple of years ago or a few years ago now, the book by Joseph S. Benner, The Impersonal Life. That's what it's talking about here. My sense of who I am, my identity, Tim Hayes, certain age, certain level of education, certain car that he drives, certain family members that he grew up with, that whole sense of me is nothing compared to the actuality of life flowing through the body-mind personality, as long as it lasts. This work tells us that the body is a very temporary communication device. That's all it is. It's not your essence. The physical body, this energy that we call physical, is temporary. And surrender means you wake up to that and you know the truth of this through every fiber of your being, that there is no one here, that your thoughts about yourself are not your true self. There is no one here living a life, but life is flowing through this body-mind energy system as long as it lasts. This life is this energy of creation. This life is the energy that keeps your heart beating and your food digesting and your breath moving without any conscious direction from you. And this is hard for us to comprehend. We're not taught to tune into that. We're not taught about the mystery in the last lesson. Earlier in this lesson, they're talking about you wake up and you start realizing you're living from mystery to mystery to mystery. The truth of life is you don't know what anything is or is for. What your conscious logical mind can generate in terms of thoughts and beliefs and rationalizations for things is just a game that you play. But it doesn't change your true nature. And your conscious logical mind is nowhere near powerful enough to figure out how to make an acorn, let alone how the world is spinning and what your true nature is and how you can define your own purpose. And so the text goes on to say, here is where the mystical transformation is culminated or completed. Where? In surrender. In this next step, phase, tool, growth, realization, this is where you begin to understand at deeper and deeper levels the meaning of the teaching, quote, I live, yet not I, but Christ dwelleth as me. So this Christ mind, this one mind, the spark of it that seems to manifest as me, is living through me. I'm just this little hose, this little spigot coming off of this cosmic energy hydrant, right? That all the life of, all the energy of creation is flowing from this huge hydrant, and each one of us that conceive of ourselves as individuals is like a separate hose that's coming off that one hydrant. And the hydrant is always on. There is no off switch. The creative energy is flowing through every human being in existence. And to the degree that they wake up to it, each human being becomes awake and aware that they have dominion over where they point that hose, over which flavor of energy they choose to express. Rage, sadness, fear, joy, appreciation, admiration, cherishing, hurt, confusion, bitterness. Each of us, to the degree that we are educated to the fact that this is the truth, we can exert that creative force. We can choose where we point that creative energy. And as we do that, That creates our experience of life. So the text goes on to say, surrender is a stage in which perfect peace is the foundation. It's not the foundation for passivity or inactivity, but it's the foundation for even more activity. When you do the first four steps, the first four keys to the kingdom, you practice them and they become part of your conscious awareness moment to moment, you find yourself, as long as you are in the world, being busier and busier. And you find that you're asked to do more and more. So here's a trigger warning for you. There are some, if you have religious training, you're probably through the next few paragraphs or pages of this lesson, you're probably going to get triggered to thoughts like, that's blasphemy. That's hubris. That's ego. So just a trigger warning. It may be coming. In this work, when that happens, we encourage people to remember their breath. Breathe and soften. Notice the tension arising within you. Go back to lesson three where it says, any kind of reactivity is my signal that I need to apply the forgiveness process to my own thoughts and beliefs. Reactivity indicates the need for self-forgiveness, applying that tool of dismantling anything that's false from my energy system. So back to this paragraph. Surrender is a stage in which perfect peace is the foundation for even more activity. You find yourself, as long as you are in the world, being busier and busier and being asked to do more and more. You become even more responsible. Eventually, you come to see that because you are Christ, you are responsible for the whole of creation. You come to see that you cannot think a thought without disturbing the farthest of stars. It is that responsibility from which you have shrunk and tried to contain yourself as a tiny, myopic piece of foam, all because you have feared being responsible for the whole. But the way of the heart corrects your perception so that you come to recognize that your greatest joy, your greatest fulfillment is in wholly and deliberately accepting responsibility for the whole entirety of creation. Why? Because you suddenly realize you're not the maker and the doer. And because you realize you're not the maker and the doer, then you can accept responsibility for anything and everything because it's through you that the creation flows and all power under heaven and earth is made to flow to manifest the love of creation. So in short, it's in the Creator's hands. It's not in yours. So this is one of those times where, you know, every spiritual teaching that tries to use words has to have koans, has to have a paradox, has to have contradictory statements. And how much more contradictory can you get than this? You learn to take full responsibility for everything because you realize you're not responsible for anything. You're not doing anything. It's being done through you. What? This is gibberish for the conscious logical mind, for the Western mind. It doesn't make any sense at all. That's why we encourage people to do the exercises when you're going through a practice like this, because what you will experience when you remind yourself of the first two or three axioms that we've covered, things like you don't experience anything that you don't choose to experience. You are the one who's creating your experience of life in each moment. And nothing that you experienced was ever forced upon you. And you don't need to do anything. You have choice in each moment. You have choice about how to interpret and respond to the flow of life that's expressing in, through, as, and around you in each moment. And as you practice waking up to this, observing it for yourself, and then you practice asking, what is it I truly want? What is it that wants to express through me in this moment? And then you practice this idea of keeping your intention focused on those sets of questions. And then you practice allowing whatever comes up. One of the big keys for me in the allowance work was to recognize that what allowance was really about for me is that I had to work really intently to focus my mind energy on the earliest possible warning signs that I could detect that I was resisting something, that I was having a negative reaction. And as soon as I did, I would call a timeout for myself, take those calming breaths, the best calming techniques I'd ever learned, and apply them to myself in that moment so that I could begin to release the resistance. It wasn't this active, proactive, conscious, logical thing that I could do to be allowing. My mind couldn't wrap itself around that. So I had to go at it through the back door and say, look, let me just pay attention to what happens in me when I'm in resistance. Let me just get better and better at being alive and awake and aware consciously in the moment, so I'm monitoring the physical, the mental, and the emotional energies that are either I'm creating or they're expressing through me. And the more I did that, the better I got at catching the resistance, the tightness, the tension, the thought in my head that says no, or that person's a jerk, or... And I would just take that breath that has me hold the energy at the top of the breath where my lungs are full and slowly exhale as I question, how am I creating this emotion, this resistance, this conclusion? And as Krishnamurti would, you know, his writings really taught me, that's the process that helps loosen my grip on it. I don't really have to do anything else once I realize, oh, I'm the one creating this tension. I'm the one creating this pain. If I don't like the tension or the pain, and I realize I'm doing it, I breathe and soften, and whatever activity I was using to create the tension, the judgment, the negative emotion, it ceases because I'm no longer pouring energy into it because I'm awake and aware. You know, if I'm experiencing a headache on the right side of my head and I don't know why, and somebody comes along and says, hey, Tim, why are you hitting yourself on the right side of the head with that hammer? I didn't realize I was doing it. As soon as I realized that was happening, I don't keep hitting myself in the head. It's ridiculous how simple the process is. The Western mind wants to make these things so complicated. So for me, the allowance in these five keys to the kingdom evolved, grew from my focused practice to monitor and catch the earliest warning signs of my tension or upset, my belief that I'm right and somebody else is wrong, that's followed by or preceded by a tension in my throat or my chest or my gut or my hands or my teeth grinding, and just breathe into it and notice, ah, Tim, you're really in judgment here. And with being gentle with myself, observing, breathing, then this allowing space would open up. Once that happens and I stay in it long enough, I start to get an inkling of, wow, I'm not really doing much of anything here. Yet, paradoxically, a lot more is getting done. I'm spending a lot less time thinking of myself as the psychologist, or as the father, or as the son to my mother. I'm spending a lot less time pouring my mind energy into my identifications with my height and my weight and my accomplishments and my education and my status. I spend a lot less time in the energy, the mental energy, on those aspects of my thoughts and my history. And lo and behold, I'm spending a lot more time actually doing things. I am busier. I am more productive in an absolute sense, not in this relative sense that I label what is productive and I have a to-do list that's 147 items long that I check them off every day. Not in that sense, but in the sense that, as this paragraph reads, I find myself paradoxically resting in surrender as the perfect peace comes and builds a foundation for even more activity. And I find that as long as I'm in the world, I get weirdly busier and busier, and I become even more productive, they say here, responsible, and I take more responsibility for my thought process, for my choosing judgment, and my negative emotions. I take responsibility for that, and I give responsibility for all the good stuff that comes from my interacting with others. I give that responsibility and the credit for that over to creation, over to the flow of life. It's a major paradox for us to live into. We're never going to sort it out with the conscious logical mind. It doesn't make sense. The next paragraph reads, "But the way of the heart corrects your perception so that you come to recognize that your greatest joy, your greatest fulfillment is in totally, completely, openly, deliberately accepting responsibility for the whole of creation." Why? Paradoxically, because suddenly you realize you are not the maker and the doer. In an absolute sense, you were created. You are not the creator. And because that happens, then you can accept responsibility for anything and everything, because through you, this unspeakably powerful energy is made to flow. It's the manifestation of this energy of creation, this energy of desire that wants to express uniquely through you. In this text, they call it manifesting the love of God. So in short, it's in the Creator's hands, not yours. More and more deeply, you understand the phrases like, "I live, yet not I, but the Christ mind dwells as me. Not my will, but the Creator's will is being done." The book asks the question, does that begin to make sense to you? Do you begin to see how it changes how you've been taught to interpret even my teachings? This is the Yeshua teachings, Jesus teachings. The next paragraph reads, "Desire, intention, allowance, surrender." But it is a surrender into a way of being that the world can never know. It's a surrender into a way of being in which you may never receive an Oscar for your acting. You may never get any credit for anything that you do, that you think you're doing. But it is a way of being in which your consciousness becomes totally open to your union with all of creation. You will talk with a leaf as it falls from a tree. You will see the soul of a kitten as you pet it. You will talk with angels and masters, and you will be involved in board meetings in the high cosmic conference rooms. You will know that the body mind you once thought was yours is little more than a temporary teaching device. It is a tool to be picked up and utilized at the Creator's direction and to be put aside when its usefulness is done. So that even when it is time to go through the transition that you know as death, nothing will disturb your peace. You will still be in peace. As the body dies, which means simply that your attention begins to release itself from the body, just like the hand of a carpenter is released from the handle of a hammer as it is laid down on the table on the way to dinner, just as that happens, just as effortlessly as that is done, you will be able to watch the process of death with total equanimity and joy. You will watch your spirit disengage from the body. You will watch the body crumble into lifelessness so that all of your attention becomes focused in a completely new dimension. This is a dimension that is so vast that you'll be able to look down upon the earth plane, not unlike the way you might choose to hold a pebble in the palm of your hand, and in one quick glance, you see everything there is to see about that pebble. Nothing is hidden. Now, what is this all about? Does this mean there's life after death? Does this mean there really is a heaven? The mind is going to churn into all of those things. And again, we caution ourselves to come back to the teaching. This is the way of the heart. It's not about what your intellect can do. Oh, now it makes sense to me about how there is no reincarnation. Oh, now it makes sense to me that there is reincarnation. Oh, I read the text and it means this. I can't wait to tell that person that was trying to Jehovah's Witness, I'm going to go and read this to them. None of that is about this pathway. This pathway is about just noticing what your conscious logical mind wants to do, noticing, as I was talking about in the last segment of commentary, noticing the earliest warning signs of tension, upset, resistance, bitterness, any negativity, and take a time out for yourself. Perhaps you choose to soften and breathe, turn the focus into that process that's being initiated inside you, the process of thought, the process of resonance with old thoughts and traumatic energies. Step into it with the lens of questioning, childlike questioning, playfulness, observation, and release everything that's other than staying aligned with the energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you in the moment. And as you do that, you'll move to this place where a perfect peace comes over you and becomes the foundation for even more activity. And your conscious connection to that perfect peace will be a possession, will be an awareness you have, even in the most turbulent, chaotic scenes that you've ever been through or you could ever imagine being through. Right up to and including the transition that most of us call death, which is something most of us would run screaming to the hills to try and avoid. So this is not something you can understand with your conscious logical mind. This is something you have to step into an experience of. Now, don't take it on faith in terms of trusting this unquestioned belief, dogma. But faith, from the ancient Aramaic, was a word that meant something much more like tuning into the rooted center of your being, becoming consciously aware of your true nature, and then taking an action based on that. Acting from the rooted center of your being is the concept that was intended in the ancient Aramaic when they used a word that later got translated into something in Greek and then something in English as faith. Tapping into the rooted center of your being, becoming aware of the energy of creation as it wants to express uniquely through you in each moment, that's what this practice is all about. So far, far away from the concept of just do this because we tell you to. Just have faith that it's all going to work out. Not that, but now in this present moment, take a breath or two, see what you can draw on of what you've already experienced, of how you've been shifting the focus away from your intellect and into the feeling state. Ask, what do I really desire right now? See if you can catch the awareness of the tingle of the sensation of the impulse of the energy that carries the next thought. Oh, I want to turn off this radio show stuff and I want to go have some, you know, sushi. That thought is fine. Turn off the show. That's fine. Can you, before you run off to have your sushi, can you identify a little bit more within your own experiential processing of the energy that thought, I want to go have sushi, was carried in on? That's all we're asking you to do. That's what's being suggested for you to do. Because when you do that, over time, you strengthen your connection to the only relationship in your life that matters. That was coming right out of a previous lesson. The only relationship in your life that has any value is your relationship with the voice for creation that gives rise to you, gives rise to your breathing, gives rise to your heartbeat, gives rise to your food digesting. It's your connection to your source. And once you are awake and aware of that, once you strengthen that as a practice of your experience, everything else flows from that. So have, as Guy Finley says, have that first excellence and then go on and be a good householder and then go on and be a good spouse or a good son or a good daughter. Then go on and be a good teacher or a good roofer or a good plumber. But have that first excellence from which everything else flows. In the Pema Chodron work, that's, you know, one of the things they say is, here's the first step. And she's very, very good at explaining. It doesn't mean first you do this and then you do that and then you get to step three and you don't need step one anymore. First, in each new present moment, come awake. Make your home in the breathing unity. Connect to that, the energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you. Begin there in each new present moment before you go on to anything else. It is the first step that allows all of the other steps in each moment to unfold. It's not something you do when you're first beginning and then you put it down and you don't need to do it anymore. It doesn't matter how long I've been on a spiritual path or how many accolades I've gotten about as a great spiritual teacher. If I forget to focus on my true nature and get centered in my breath, if I forget to catch the earliest warning signs of tension or upset or my taking offense at something that's arisen or something that someone says or does, if I forget that, it doesn't matter how great a spiritual teacher you think I am or I think I am, I'm as stuck as the most green novice ever. So this is not a time-based thing. First you do this, then you do that, then after a while this. And if, this is first, in each new present moment, be awake. Come aware. Connect with your breath. Ask yourself what you truly desire. Connect with that energy of creation as it wants to express uniquely through you in each moment. Bring the focus of your attention into that question, what do I desire? Stay aligned with that. Allow whatever happens. In other words, keep scanning for the resistance, the judgment, the tension. Understand how you're the one creating it in each moment, and how if you pour your energy into the resistance, into the judgment, into the tension, you pull yourself out of the flow of life. And then surrender by asking to be taught in each new present moment to whatever can be revealed about you, about what your brother and sister need, about life unfolding in the moment. We are always being taught. The text goes on to say, I am one, this is in the middle, about the middle of page 64, I am one, this is Yeshua speaking, who has chosen to assume responsibility for the little pebble called earth and all of life that dwells therein. Do these practices and you too will know that energy and the reality of wrapping your fingers around the entirety of a solar system and becoming the creator or savior of that dimension. And it begins by choosing to take responsibility for your life, your mind, your little pebble, your domain, your body, your thought process, your traumatic energies, your personal dimension. It begins by saying, quote, I and I alone am the source of what I experience and perceive. I am not a victim of the world I see. Everything I experience, I have called to myself, plain and simple. No excuses, no ifs, ands, or buts. That is the way it is. Close quote. When you move to that space, gone will be your immaturity, your resistance to simply being responsible for your experience. The way of the heart, then, cultivates a maturity of desire, intention, allowance, and surrender. Again, that word cultivate, working with this, breathing into it, practicing present moment awareness, allowing life to teach you in each new present moment, asking to be taught in each new present moment, cultivating this skill of learning to live in the question, as so many of the great teachers would ask us to do. That's a way to rephrase what Krishnamurti was calling us to. Krishnamurti in his writings, again, observe, 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 observe. That means question, live in the question. Rainier Maria Rilke would say, we must learn to live in the question. Why? Why not push for answers? Well, because in the moment, when any mind can posit a powerful question, the mind that came up with that question is incapable of understanding and processing the answer. The answer might be there. It might be as plain as the nose on my face to somebody who's built what Michael Rice would call the brain cells for it, or has a life experience for it, or has been practicing releasing their identification with other garbage. The answer might be right there, but I can't comprehend it. Even if someone were to say it to me in plain English, it would sound like gibberish, just like some of the paragraphs in this teaching. You can be in the world, but not of the world. What does that mean? Right. You'll have responsibility for everything because you recognize you don't do anything. What does that mean? The answer is right there. Someone speaking it as well as they can using the limitations of the English language, and my brain can't comprehend it. That's why it is imperative, it is essential for me, if I want to learn, this came to me a lot of years ago now, I would say, listen, in order for me to learn anything, I must enter a situation, enter a new present moment with some observation. I need to be awake and aware. So what's a key observation I can make? Well, the fact of the matter is I don't know everything. Right? There's all kinds of stuff about particle physics and cooking and auto mechanics I don't know anything about. Ask me something about the stuff I've studied and practiced for almost 48 years. I know some stuff about that. But, you know, how is this computer that I'm staring at to do the dashboard for the Mindshifters radio, how is that working? I have no idea how that works. There are people that understand that far better than I do. So here's the initial observation I can make as I go into each new present moment. I don't know everything. So here's the next observation that's a direct extension of that observation. So whatever I think I know is either only partially true or perhaps even completely false. Now, if I go into a situation with my eyes open and those observations active, there's a potential for me to learn something. This is why we say, learning to live in the question is essential. Because if I go into a situation telling you, listen, I know all about God, I know all about spirituality, I know all about psychology, and I'm going to tell you about you. When I go into a situation like that, I'm going to leave that situation knowing what I knew. There's no possibility for learning unless I understand. Basically, I don't know what the heck's going on here. I don't know when I was created or who created me or who created my parents or why I'm here. I'd like to learn. I have the potential to learn. I have the potential to learn through experience that far outstrips anything my language can express. This is why we have these peak emotional experiences, these spiritual awakenings, and we go to try and tell somebody about it, and we sound like we're just learning the language for the first time. It was like language fails us. It's a very simple tool, like the conscious logical mind. It's supposed to be a faithful servant. Language is of the conscious logical mind, and this pathway is about an awakened heart. A tapping into a level of energy, vibration, experience, you might say emotion, you might say energetic connection. Again, language fails us to describe the experience of life. So we're doing the best we can with the language we have to describe some practices people can engage in, which will usher them into an experience that goes beyond words, each new heartbeat, every breath. So I realize we are near the end of our hour. I will thank you all for being here. I will remind us all that tomorrow's another support group on a Thursday. We'll be back tomorrow and Friday for more working through the way of mastery. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are the energy of love or creation expressing in form. And everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Thanks for playing recordings the last couple days.
You're welcome. Welcome back.
Thank
you. Hope you have a fabulous show.
Thank you. Appreciate you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today's Wednesday, March the 9th, 2022, and our calling number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your questions and your comments because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael just a moment to get dialed in, and I'll just thank everybody for being with us the last couple of days. We've done pre-recording shows because yesterday Michael was on his way back here, so he was in an airplane, and I was with my brother moving my dad into I just got a text. I was just making sure who it was there. Moving my dad into an assisted living facility for memory care. So they'll be transferring him tomorrow from the skilled nursing center that he's been in since December and moving him over to the assisted living center. And hopefully he will feel more like at home and not in such a clinical situation. And he will continue with physical therapy and occupational therapy and memory therapy. And hopefully we'll get him a little further back into what's going on in the world. So give Michael just a moment. He's still not on the switchboard. I'll invite you to go to our website, which is whyagain, whyagain.org, and look around, click on different things, and if you find something that's not working, please drop me a line at jeannie@whyagain.org and let me know what's going on, and I'll see what I can do to get things going. And if you haven't downloaded the app, please do so or do the upgrade on it, because there are a lot of things on the app now that weren't before. And so lots of things besides the two worksheets and the game. There's now the commitments, a link to a more page, which is a lot of links to a lot of different things. And then there's the ability to ask questions from any page within the app. So put that to work. And Michael is now with us, and he is back here with me in Virginia. So welcome, Michael.
Yes, finally made the journey back. And so from 80-degree weather to 40, 50-degree weather later this week, it's supposed to go down to 10 degrees one night. Like, this is crazy. This is supposed to be March. It's supposed to be warming up in spring. But anyway, here we are. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Glad you're part of the process of taking these first century Aramaic tools farther and farther afoot. And thank you for your support and the commitment to make these tools available to every mind, heart, and being on planet Earth. So that's what we're about doing. So delighted to have you with us. And the other day we were talking about the powered person dynamic, and I was sharing about some interaction with someone who was seemingly trapped in that dynamic. And if you remember the powered person, just to review, if you're new to the show or you haven't been involved in that, from our codependence to interdependence workshop, we introduce the concept of a powered person. And the powered person is someone who at some point in your life had more power over your life than you did. It's usually a parent, but not necessarily a parent. It could be anyone when there are three particular circumstances that happen. And it's almost like when these three circumstances occur in someone's life, their energy field opens up and there is a dynamic involved that we're referring to as the power person dynamic that literally will run the rest of that person's life. And quite literally runs the world. And so the three things that occur for that to happen, and again, as I say, it's usually a parent with a child, but not necessarily. It's the three circumstances that create this dynamic in someone's mind. One, power person was not, had more power over your life, pardon me, than you did. Two, power person was not functioning as a human being, was not functioning as love. And three, the object of that circumstance or situation perceived it as survival. And when that occurs, this installs, so to speak, a whole set of behaviors, a whole set of controls in the mind. It's like it just throws the operating system of the mind off base and creates an identity based in the power person dynamic. once that's installed in the mind, until someone understands the power person dynamic and does the work required to heal that dynamic, it will run the rest of their lives. And the main attribute of running someone's life, of someone's life being, pardon me, run by that dynamic, is that their behaviors will be determined according to what was installed in the mind and the level of stress that someone's under at any given moment. And there are three basic behaviors that come from that dynamic. The level of stress that someone's under will determine just behavior is in control. When there's little or no stress, someone will do whatever they did to get along with their power person. When stress starts to build, they'll do what they did to resist and survive their power person. And when they become ultra stiff, they'll do what their power person did that they hated the most. And I shared the other day that I was working with someone who's been doing this work for a long time and had experienced several occasions where really, you know, miraculous things had happened in their lives, really like major changes that were beneficial and desired. And then in working with them, I happened to connect with them when I was in Florida. And they were in a situation where there was some trauma happening and stress was elevated. And while I don't usually do any one-on-one work, I told this person I'd be glad to be available. They were there. I was there. That I would take them through a still point session. And in the past, they'd experienced still point sessions that were literally like mega life-changing, you know, like major, major life shifts. And they were under stress again. Power person dynamic was up. They were somewhat able to control themselves, but it was there. And I suggested that it was time to breathe. And the level of resistance was just monumental. And, you know, it didn't make any sense. It's like you've experienced healing on this level before with this type of thing and the major shifts in your life. Why would you refuse the opportunity to breathe? That just makes no sense. And they actually went into quite a display of rage. It's like, I'm offering to support you with something that you know works, you've experienced it working. What's the deal? And it was really quite a gift for me because it just gave me another level of understanding, another level of teaching power person dynamic. And what I realized as I was contemplating this and, you know, doing my own breathing in the situation was that, you remember in the situation where the power person is in control, has more control over one's life than they do. They're not functioning as love. It's perceived as survival. And we talk about how the energy field of that individual who's the subject of that opens and just literally absorbs, just like a sponge, sucks in all of the energy that's in the environment. And what became clear was that this person in this situation, even when they realized it was a power person situation, power person dynamic, that what their power person had modeled for them, the energy dynamics of the power person, were still running their lives. And this is someone who's, you know, in their mid-50s, has experienced healing with these tools. But the resistance. And, you know, I've shared before that when someone is under stress, you're going to be quite correct if you watch their behavior. And then, although you may not want to do this because you may have it pointed, their stress pointed at you, but if you turn to them and ask them how it felt when their power person did whatever it is that they're doing currently, and whatever the behavior is, how did it feel when your power person did this behavior to you? You'll be right on track. You'll know exactly what the power person had done to them. But the refinement that I got, the piece of the puzzle that I got was, so if the power person was resistant to, you know, change, resistant to healing, if the power person, you know, had to be in control, you know, that control dynamic is so profoundly powerful when people think that they can only survive when they're in control. And so each of the dynamics from that power person will tend to be absorbed. And this was this resistance to being supported, this resistance to being assisted, it's another dynamic absorbed from the power person. So the control, when one tries to control, if you try to run everything, if you're running that dynamic as maybe your power person did, just remember that if you're going to try to run everything, you have to be responsible for everything. And my offering is that's a load nobody can carry. It's too much for anybody to carry. So try to control everything, then you ultimately have to be responsible for everything. And then if your power person told you that you were worthless, you were bad, you were wrong, what have you, then you'll turn that very behavior from your power person on yourself when you fail at being able to control everything and try to take responsibility for everything. The load of that is just, it's more than anybody can bear. So just to add a shade, it's a small piece, but it's an important piece. I mean, there are several things that we've discovered that as you wake up to this power person dynamic and you see what's been controlling you, then you realize that you have the opportunity to change that. And if you choose to change it, then everything's going to shift. And it's a major piece of work to do. So when one becomes ultra-stressed, there are several things that will be resonated from that power-person interaction that will literally drive behavior and remove choice. And if you remember the context in which I shared this the other day, is if there are certain behaviors that you've recognized that your power person did, and you observe that under stress, that's what you want to do. You have to, and that's what you will feel will be most rewarding, most successful if you perceive that. But then you recognize when you get conscious that that really doesn't work for you. Commitment to stop doing what you feel like doing, and you start to make choices when you're in that connected space of love where you really still have choice. So if you find yourself doing the behavior that your power person did to you that you hated the most, then and you realize that doesn't serve you, that that's not what you want. Usually when somebody does that, that's the very thing that gets them into hot water, into difficulty in their relationships, by doing the behavior that their power person did to them that they hated. And they realized it becomes one of the most destructive factors in their relationship. And you know, sooner or later, you've got to admit, I'm doing exactly what my power person did here. But it will feel right because the power person, you know, when you were subject to that power person, if your field opened and just absorbed what was going on for your power person, the energetic patterns, the energy of, this is the only thing I can do. This is the right thing for me to do. This is the successful thing for me to do. Then that's what's going to happen. That's what you're going to feel like doing to make a choice to do something different. You have to make a choice to actually choose rather than do what your power person did. And when that dynamic changes, you're going to get to experience all kinds of things that went on because it feels right because that's the energy that was absorbed in that state when you were just wide open. The only thing that could possibly cause you to win. It's the only thing that could possibly be successful. And it's the exact opposite. But until somebody realizes that's what's running them, they think that's the only way to do it. And so when you make a choice to do something different, then the game changes. Again, some of the things that will happen when that dynamic is resonated into activity, and remember, it's resonated into activity when one becomes ultra-stressed. So your voice, or what seems to be your own voice, will literally be that of your power person. You'll literally speak right down to the word patterns of your power person, right down to the thought patterns will come out of your mouth and feel right. And those thought and word patterns are literally what were just detested by you. But when we're not in a state where being is available and choice is possible, then what happens is we look into our own unconscious dynamics and we look at, what did God do in order to win over me? And of course, that power person at that moment is God. That's the person that's winning. So one looks into their own unconscious dynamics and says, oh, what did they do? And that's exactly what will feel right. Because if God did it and won over me, then if I do it, then I can win over this person that I'm in front of, that I'm experiencing, that I believe is the cause of my stress, although the cause of my stress is internal. Power person was in resistance to truth, and, you know, that's what you're going to do in those states. If you choose ahead of time, then instead of just playing that out, you get to be conscious and you get to raise to awareness. You get to become conscious of the energetic patterns of what the power person did. And since it is usually apparent in a child, it's something that's reinforced over and over and over and over and over and over again. And it's so far out of conscious awareness that it seems uncontrollable. Once you understand it and you see yourself doing it, and you've said to yourself, you know, after you've done what your power person did to you that you hated the most, to perhaps that person who you cherish the most, afterward you went, oh my God, that was so terrible. Look what I did. Oh, I'm never going to do that again. But if you never go in and forgive that content from your mind, if you never apply the forgiveness process, then when the stress is up and the chips are down, that's what you're going to do again. So if your power person was resistant to doing the work that needed to be done, then when that dynamic comes up, you'll resist doing the work that needs to be done. So if, you know, imagine that your power person is doing this crazy thing and you say to them, what are you doing? This is just not right. And you give them some sort of correction, and they go into rage and hostility about, how dare you correct me? How dare you say such things? Then watch yourself under stress as you say to the people around you, how dare you correct me? How dare you say such things? If your power person was resistant to admitting the truth, looking at the truth of what they were doing, how they were treating you, and continued the negative treatment, then the automatic unconscious dynamic for that child 2 years later, 5 years later, 20 years later, 50 years later, will be to do exactly the same thing. And if the power person was unable to admit how they were treating you as a child, or in the power person situation, again, it's usually a child and a parent, then 2, 10, 20, 50 years later, you'll still be resistant to seeing the truth about how you treat others. Because your mind will relabel it. You know, when your power person did it to you, if your power person did it to you, then you classify it as abuse. But when you do it to others, you just say, well, that's just how I protect myself. Well, that's just how I correct them. Well, that's just how I support them in doing things right. The mind will always have an excuse. Continue to treat them that way. So when you look in any particular situation at the goal you had in the situation you're in, that 2, 10, 20, 50 years later, if you look at the goal that's driving your behavior that brings that power person dynamic up, and it's that, you know, that one more piece of stress created by that goal that pushes you over the line to ultra stress, when that goal is violated, that's when one uses, when the mind prompts them, pardon me, to use the unresolved, unconscious power person dynamic that's built on a pain-based reality that seems to be true. What happens is when that dynamic comes up, it displaces actuality with my pained reality and the energetic dynamics of the behavior that was done by the power person. So that's a place where you stop and you look at the thought disorder, the power person message, at the root of your pain-based perception. Start to allow yourself to become conscious of, gee, I'm doing this behavior. I don't like myself when I do this behavior. In fact, I never want to do this behavior again. In fact, now that I look at it really closely, I see that that's what my power person did to me that I hated the most. Then start to look at, what was the thought disorder? What was the power person message that was given to you at the root of that pain-based perception? And that'll be the place where perhaps there'll be 77 times 70 worksheets to be done. And then, of course, based on that unconscious thought disorder, what's the concept I have of myself? What are the conclusions I come to about myself? This is where so many people just drive themselves into the ground because the power person gave that message that drove them into the ground. And now, again, remember, it sounds like my own voice, but it's actually my power person's voice that's still repeating the condemnatory thought disorder that they fed into my mind. And I had no ability to refuse that thought disorder. So this is a false construct of the mind that gets between you and the actuality of whatever situation you're in. So what is the actuality of the situation? And if you were to allow the actuality of the situation in, would it support your healing of those underlying thought disorders? And of course, you know, to tie it into the forgiveness process, look at what goal drives the whole process. You know, I want someone to be there. I want someone to pay attention to me. I want someone to give me what I want. I want them, you know, to be controllable. Whatever the dynamic is, if you look at that goal is the key way through forgiveness into healing that part of the mind. And of course, you can just get down to as simple as the question of, what's the punishment that I'm doing? And then to really, truly, you know, if you're being vile, vicious, controlling, whatever it happens to be with someone, ask yourself the question, how did it feel when someone did that to me? When you start looking at the truth of that, you stop lying to yourself that you label it as something different so you can pretend it's not the same thing. And you start to confront the fact that it is exactly the same thing. So it might be something like, you know, when my power person did whatever it was, I said they're abusing me or ignoring me. When I do it, I call what I'm, you know, when I'm doing it, I call it, well, I'm just protecting myself. I'm just expressing my power and just being careful. Where your label for the behavior was abuse or they were ignoring me or picking on whatever it happened to be. So when I actually look at the facts, does anything truly support the conclusion that I'm drawing when I'm under the spell of the power person dynamic? Because it is a spell. You know, it's that idea of casting spells. And you look at our culture, one of the most important things in the educational system is what? Learning to spell. And we've been given the idea that that's writing letters. But by the writing of letters, we can be put under a spell. And forgiveness undoes the spell. And whenever someone's doing behavior that's based in some form of hostility or fear, they're always under a spell. And it will always be the spell installed by the power person. To the point where, if you were to look, churches, businesses, governments, families, countries, this is the dynamic that runs the whole game. under stress, the individual tends to do whatever they did, pardon me, whatever was done to them that they hated the most that was done by their power person. That's the thing that happens when we become ultra-stressed. And those energetic dynamics are chipped away by the act of forgiveness. And as Jeannie was saying, if you download Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness from your app store, just do a search for Heartland, H-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Heartland, one word, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, Forgiveness. Then you will find the world's only forgiveness app. And in it, you can do one of two different versions of the reality management forgiveness worksheet and start to dissolve that power person dynamic in your mind. It may mean confronting some very deep, hurtful things, energetic patterns, messages from the power person that you experienced as being quite painful. And there's where the reminder to make sure that as you do your work, you're focused in and focused on conscious, active, present love. Because it is that active presence of love. When anything from the unconscious is surfaced directly and love is present, that which is surfaced begins to dissolve in the presence of active love. That which is of a disintegrative nature in the presence of love will simply be burned out of the system. Pardon me, will be disintegrated. And so that's what we're here to do, to support the disintegration of everything based in hostility, fear, rage, guilt, and trauma. And to move to a world where people truly function as human beings. And of course, if you go back to the moment where you held a newborn child and tap in to the essence of that newborn, you'll always find the presence of conscious, active love. Bring that love forward at the same time as something hidden in the unconscious, something based in hostility or fear comes forward, and whatever picks up his head is going to begin to dissolve just automatically. Dissolution, removal. And so we're here to make that tool of removal available. If you don't have a phone, you can use it on. I was talking to a gentleman yesterday who he's got an older phone and couldn't download it. Then you can go to the website and you can print off the worksheet. And or you can actually do the forgiveness process right there on the website. There's a live process for doing that. One of the things I realize takes people who are excited about doing forgiveness work out of doing forgiveness. And it always boggles my mind how people get so excited when they first hear about it. But then when they really need to be doing the work, when they are ultra stressed, power person dynamic of resistance and survival and I don't want to do this, tend to come up and control them. Like, wait a minute, I thought you were going to do this piece of work. Well, yeah, I was, but, you know, I'm busy. Well, you know, I have things on my plate. Well, you know, there are 1,000 well, you knows. As I'm saying with this individual that got, I mean, literally this individual's life was, this person was in really dire emotional straits. Their business was falling apart and their lives were a mess. They came and did an intensive, and the still point process just blew that crazy energy that had been running them out of their lives, and they turned around to become actually very, like, extremely successful in what they were doing. But here they are with the next layer up, and there's resistance to doing the next piece of work. And I thank that person for displaying that behavior, because that's what cued me into, oh, okay, now I got it. So if the power person was in resistance, then when the opportunity to heal comes, there's going to be resistance. That's just part of the power person dynamic. And so I was quite thankful for being handed that opportunity to learn on the next level by observing behavior. And I appreciate the fact that you're here to be part of the conversation. We're about the halfway point through the show. So, Ms. G, do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet. So if somebody presses one, you are first in line. We have 29 minutes. We have plenty of time.
So lots of time for a couple of conversations. How's everybody doing out there? What's happening in your world? Anything to share? Any successes about the work you've done? The insights you've been getting from the work you've been doing? Anyone who's attempted to do a piece of work and hasn't found it to be successful for them? That has questions about any aspect of the work? How can we support you if you're out there in listener land? And you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And then if you push 1, that will raise a hand in the control panel. And through the magic of technology, Jeannie will introduce you by your area code, and you and I will be having a conversation. So what's on your mind? How can we support you? Any thoughts for you on those topics, sweetheart?
Well, I'm not sure. I was thinking about when you were talking about that and the stress being up, and like my stress is like out the roof right now. But I'm not sure if I'm just denying a power person dynamic or if I'm just being really good at keeping it hidden or keeping control of it, or have I risen above it? I don't know.
If you're finding yourself that stressed, the thing to look at would be, so what are the goals that you can delete that will lower your stress level? Remember that, you know, people say, well, I was in a stressful life situation. Well, there's no such thing as a stressful life situation. The thing that creates the stress in any given situation is you have goals for that situation to be different. If you don't have a goal for that situation to be different, there will be no stress, because goals create stress. So what with the amount of stress that's up, and I know there's a lot to do with Dad, and again, I apologize for being away the last week and a half, and you having to handle that all on your own, but what are the goals that you could be canceling to let loose of that stress that has you in that ultra-tight place?
Well, I think I've, you know, each day I've been pretty good at, okay, this is my goal for today, you know, what I can handle, what, you know, whether it was signing him up or moving his furniture or whatever. But I think
right.
It's like coming to the end of all of the to-do list and everything. I don't know of a goal right now that I'm holding. But maybe it's just that it's at the end of it and I can finally let down or something, and so then it creeps up on me. I don't know.
Let yourself drop into a deeper space of processing.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, and I know this has never been a drug for you, but, you know, one of the most or the most common drug on the planet is that of busy. And you've had lots of goals to keep you busy. Is the lack of goals now something that's going to get you out of your busyness?
That makes sense.
And you're going to have to start to look at some things you maybe have been using the busyness not to look at. Some other things to be faced might surface. And that...
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. So do you have any thoughts?
Because I've definitely gotten a lot of stuff done, because even the neighbor made a comment of, oh, I see you've already, you know, you cleaned your sheds and you've done this, you've moved your dad's furniture, and, you know, it's not even spring cleaning day or something like that, you know.
Well, I remember when I left, the agreement was that you were going to just be taking care of yourself. And I come back here and you've gone through everything on the property without stop.
Yeah, well, but I have taken time during the day and I've done the Avicen a lot, and I've breathed a lot. I've gone to bed early, but then that means I've gotten up early. Not sleeping well, I think, is part of it, too.
Yeah. I'm holding you in my heart, sweetheart. And if you're out there in listener land, our call-in number, 563-999-3581. Let's have a conversation. Monologue's complete. Time for dialogue. If you're out there, now's the opportunity to step up to the plate. What's on your mind?
We have a hand up.
Oh, great. Let's say hello.
541, I believe. This is Miss Julie.
Hi, it is. Hello.
Hey there, young lady. Welcome.
Hi. Welcome to you, too. So
nice to be home, although we're looking, you know, I was in Los Angeles. The weather was 75 and 80 degrees, and then I went, you know, I couldn't get back here. Planes couldn't, to change my ticket was going to be $900. It was cheaper to fly to Florida than fly from Florida to here. And it was 75 there, and we're looking at 10 degrees one night and the next week. It's the coldest it's been this whole winter. I'm like, wait a minute, this is March.
I know, it's really strange. It's pretty strange,
it is.
Yeah. It is what it is.
I'm thinking more and more,
I'm really seeing how our minds create an immediate reality, you know, and of course joined minds. And so anyway, I don't know. I've been noticing integrity in little lessons that, I already shared this once, I think. I already shared this.
Yeah, you did share
you know
that integrity insight. That was powerful.
Yeah, it's still working with me. my relationship with my boyfriend's much better now. And so I was noticing the other day, I have kind of a big load of goals this week to accomplish some things. And my boyfriend decided he felt well enough to go swimming finally after having a rash for a long time and really wanting the exercise. But that wasn't in my schedule. I just had booked my whole day and set my goals. And so I went into stress about how do I include him into my day and how, you know, I am. What do I have to sacrifice and leave out of my life, you know? And I really wanted to keep a role and keep a momentum. And then I caught myself, instead of blaming him, I saw the pattern of this always happens and this is what I'm trying to get stronger in, is just, you know, really stand in my truth and keep my schedule if that's what I need to do. And so the word integrity came and to me and those thoughts, and I realize I'm out of integrity with myself. Why is it that I'm letting him look like he's the one upsetting me? I really did catch myself. And that was good.
Did your power person ever portray situations as though you were the one that was to blame for their upset?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Well,
next
my mom was always upset. Yeah, yeah. So,
and was she always pointing at you or someone else?
I don't know if it was all the time, but it was like I had developed a pattern, a coping pattern, to not rock her boat any further and just sort of take the blame, really. Not an actual blame, but just to, I always assumed it was me that was upsetting her. Yeah. So I would change my behavior quickly. That's why I'm so good at catching myself. No. But anyway, I just needed to cancel some goals or rearrange some goals or just say, no, I can't do that this time, you know. And there are simple ways when I start learning and training myself to manage my life, just like the Laws of Living class taught us all those exercises and techniques.
Right.
So I relaxed about it and just started really looking more clearly at the goals I had. And I finally came up with another realization, actually, that some of the processing time that I need all the time when I'm upset has to do with not feeling like it's okay to cancel a goal that is important to my power person. And so putting myself second and being out of integrity with myself and all that processing time that I seem to have taken through these last 4 years in this relationship have been to recover from the stress and just recover from saying I need to do this for myself and having that courage to say it and just so much, you know, like always a big deal. But now, this time, I saw that I did do some processing, but I got the relief quickly because I saw that I was trying to blame him again, and that and actually it was about goals and about integrity and me keeping the goals I want to keep with myself. And so this was really a big thing because usually I'll text him and explain my processing. You know, it's a really long text. And I figure it's teaching him, it's showing him, you know, blah, 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 what I'm learning or dealing with. Well, this time I decided I don't need to do all that. I already have processed it. And now I'm just going to tell him that there's two times that will work for me that he can choose. And I said, which one would be better for me? And he came back with, let's do the one that's better for you. And it was that simple. So I now see, once again, that all of my upsets are because I have upset inside me. Have you ever heard that? I actually just quoted you exactly. Usually I have too much resistance.
I know.
So funny.
Yeah.
So,
and,
you know,
and
it's just, yeah.
Look at how your power person blamed and recognize that it's an old habit and it's just another piece to be deleted from the mind. Because if you think that the only way you're safe is if you find somebody else to blame, which is copying the power person dynamic, that would be, say, for instance, a way the mind might present it, then, well, I can't let go of this because then I'm in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Wait, I didn't catch that. Because I'm in trouble? Oh, because
I would get in trouble
with my power person.
Inside myself. Well, if I got in trouble with my power person and I internalized that, if I was, that was the thing where, you know, they had the control, they were not functioning as love, and I perceived it as survival, then I take that on. And as soon as I go into that pattern, I'll do that to myself. There's nobody here to give me trouble, but I will create the construct of I'm in trouble if I don't do it.
Yeah, and I'll punish myself, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good. I'm so glad you brought that up because remember my punishment pattern when I resisted my power person was to get sent to my room, and you've heard the story about how it became 4 days once because I kept resisting. And so, yeah. So I can stop punishing myself. Yeah.
Exactly. And you can take care of yourself. You can reward yourself. Recognize, oh, here's a pattern I've worked through. This is so powerful. Let's see, what would a reward look like? Ah, I think I'll go soak in a bathtub with some nice scented candles or some nice bath oils or what have you and take care of myself and create a whole new pattern within yourself that when you make choices out of where you take care of yourself, that you reward yourself instead of going back to the, my power person told me I was selfish, I was so now here I am playing that one out. I mean, there's so many subtleties that just need to be let loose of.
So it creates a new neural pathway that I can choose at the fork in the road instead of the old behavior.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you can ask for support. You can ask for support from your boyfriend to do it and look at the support you got. Oh, well, let's do it at the time that works for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like he's really there to support you.
Yeah.
That's sweet. That's awesome.
Yeah. So
good work, young lady.
There's a lot. And, yeah, you know, and then I think after that, later that week or the day or so, sometime in the last few days, I realized that maybe my father did actually hold resentment for me, you know? Like, I felt it as a young child if I was crying in the crib or whatever, and there was this energy glaring at me, I think, you know? And But how can I tell the truth about that? I don't know for sure, but it came up. It was another layer that came up, and I now know that if he was holding resentment for me, it wasn't about me. He was just holding resentment, you know,
right, exactly.
For whatever, everything.
And
I think,
You don't have to know whether or not it was true. You don't have to understand, figure that one out. All you have to do is go,
okay. Oh,
it seemed like, and then do the worksheet as though it's true. And that will let, you know, whether it was something you totally fantasized internally or it was actual doesn't matter. You'll process through the energy. You don't have to remember the number one pseudo solution to non-being mind is if I could just figure this out. You don't have to figure out whether it was true or not. If it presents itself, do some forgiveness work around it and let the energy go, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're right about that. I think I have done a little bit of that. Because I was just thinking about my father, wondering how's he doing. I haven't called him in a few weeks, and he's old, and he's ready to go. He says he wants us to applaud when he leaves. He'll be happy. But I was sensing, well, you know, maybe he and I have completed our relationship issues. Maybe there aren't there any anymore. And then maybe he's actually done some work on his resentment over the years too, you know, because he's made an effort to actually tell me, I really love you and don't worry, I'm really glad the way everything turned out. Everything turned out just fine and I'm not upset or holding any, you know, grudges or grievances. He didn't use those words, but that was what he wanted to get across to me. In case he died the next day, you know?
Awesome.
So, I know. So that's kind of done, I think, and he may be moving on soon. I'm going to look at how I might release him, too. Maybe I have a few little stray strands of holding on. Wow, this is weird.
And it might
I'm
be
talking
time.
About my father. Oh, go ahead.
It might be well. It's really quite shocking that you end up talking about your father when you're processing stuff around your boyfriend. I can't imagine why that would be.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we were on that subject. I forgot. Oh, my gosh.
And so
yeah,
it
I did almost
nice
let go
gift.
Of him.
Yeah, it might be a
what?
Nice gift to give yourself and to give your dad to offer some acknowledgement to your dad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Give him that gift that...
Yeah,
maybe the reciprocal one to the one he just gave you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's nice that you still got the opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah, I look back and my dad left about, 45 years ago. And there's so many things since, you know, it was just about the time I was starting to do this work, so I never really got to share any of it with him. And I mean, it would be awesome to have him alive and be able to share some of this stuff. I think he'd be so delighted and excited. But didn't get the opportunity, and you know, he's there. Communicate with him. Who knows?
Yeah, it might be a really good, you know, an opening or something, a softening for him. Yeah. I think I do feel up to that. I feel up to having a nice phone call with him. So
awesome.
But you know why I said, oh, this is so weird that I'm talking about my dad, is because Jeannie was talking about her dad. And I thought, there must be some resonance. I wonder how she's doing right now. But
well,
it may have nothing to do about me, but I just give her my love. Hi, Jeannie.
Hey, how are you? So... I'm doing really well. As you know, there's it's been really stressful. Like, we've done shows the last couple of days because, you know, I've finally got assessed and approved to go into this one facility, and so I had to go sign papers and get all that stuff finalized, and then we had to move his furniture and stuff yesterday because it's basically an empty apartment, and we have to furnish it. And tomorrow they're going to actually physically transfer him from the staffed facility to the what's potentially going to be the long-term care facility that he stays at. And, I mean, it's just been so busy, so many things to do. And like Michael was talking about, you know, I've cleaned out two sheds. I've cleaned out the pantry. I've straightened up an office and then moved all of Dad's stuff out. So I've just, like, stayed super busy. And today I just feel so drained. You know, it's after the radio show, I'm going to go visit Dad because I didn't see him yesterday because we were so busy moving furniture.
Mm-hmm.
And so emotionally as well as physically, it has been draining, but I feel like I'm at a good completion point. You know, I've done about all I can do, and I've said about all I can say. And from this point forward, I guess I'm just, you know, just hold the space. That's all I can do.
Yeah. Hold his hand. He'll feel it. It's hard. My boyfriend's mom died recently too, and she had Alzheimer's and all that. And you know, the fading of a person. I don't even know how to describe it in words, really.
Yeah, it is like they slowly go away each day.
And I imagine. I project and imagine. You know, what are they experiencing? Are they still there and aware but they can't communicate? Are they frustrated or are they, you know, I empathize, you know, and I guess, you know, you can't figure that out and you can just be that space.
Right.
Wonderful space, yeah. Well,
so Jeannie,
I'll be sending you blessings.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, Mike.
And just listening, Jeannie, to your words there, you might want to do some worksheets around wanting Dad to stay rather than fade out like that.
Mm. Good catch, Michael. I didn't catch that.
I will look at that. I feel like I've come to the point, I mean, like I actually, he was sleeping and I told him, you know, it was okay to go. I've done the release process. You know, I feel like I think if he were cognitive enough to actually see himself, he wouldn't want to be in the position he's in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that came up a lot for my boyfriend's mom. How he felt about his mom.
Right.
He said she wasn't her anymore. It wasn't really her anymore. That's how he dealt with it. But, you know, we know that there's an eternal soul and being there somewhere in a body that's not operating fully.
Right.
Yeah. So, but what I think what Michael said he heard you say is that you don't want to see your father like that. So that, that's the part that I would work on if it were me. What I don't want to see, what I imagine is what I'm going to see, what I'm afraid of seeing, that kind of thing again. Oh, look at you.
Right.
Sorry, Jeannie. I might be wrong, that's what's coming up for me.
Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. I should go. Maybe somebody else is there to speak. Is anyone on the line?
All right,
nobody has a hand up.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, maybe I'll bring up something that's going on in me. I have a tightness in my chest. Okay. I feel like I'm working too hard. I've got a lot of goals to accomplish and deadlines that I might have to cancel them or change them slightly. Trying to get out of a storage unit so someone else can use it, and which means I have to get rid of stuff fast. And I kind of enjoy my process of letting go of stuff before I just throw it out at the dump or something, you know. And so I'm feeling out of integrity with myself that I'm not doing it exactly the way I'd like to. I'm feeling an outside pressure to get it done. Let me see. So yeah, it is. It's a good thing for me to do for myself, and I see that I'm letting myself be motivated by someone else's need for the space. So that's giving me extra, you know, energy and momentum, but it's angst energy. It's not a clean, graceful, flowing energy, which when I ask Ruka to open the way for me, you know, it always flows easier. And actually, here's another example of integrity. If I just maintain integrity in all areas as best I can, I get to live in a different universe. And that sounds big, but, you know, my day will turn out differently if I'm not holding on to some sort of grudge or burden energy.
And remember that each time you forgive, you're literally collapsing a world in your mind.
Yeah, yeah.
A whole perceptual construct, which is what makes up the world. Most people think they're living in what's going on out there, and you hear people, I watch people a lot of times making comments about Course in Miracles, and they have no idea that when they say, oh, the world doesn't exist, the body doesn't exist, oh, that out there doesn't exist, it's like, no, it's that which is in here that doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where forgiveness needs to be applied.
And that's what restores integrity. That was never lost, but we're misperceiving. Yeah. When you were talking earlier today in your monologue, Michael, I was thinking of Putin and how if he only had these tools. And I hear a lot of people with a variety of comments about the situation, and some of them are saying we have to pray for Putin. And others take offense to that. You know, what do you mean we have to pray for him? He's a tyrant. He's the worst. And you can tell they're blaming Putin for everything. And then praying for him is not forgiveness. You know, that's making it outside of ourselves again.
Well, and remember the definition of prayer, once again from the Aramaic, is quite literally to set a trap for God. When you realize that the creator is love and you align yourself properly, you become the place that captures and brings active love into the world. That's actual prayer. And yes, don't we all need that? The petitioning is a different process than prayer, although it's for most people been lost. And we're down to just the last few seconds, I just realized. So
okay.
We'll hold the space for you to have the best year yet of your eternal life, young lady. Thanks for sharing with us. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.